Hey, it's Joe. If you're like me, you've been training hard for years and quietly wondering whether all that exercise is doing something good for your heart or something bad or both. Today, we get some real answers from a sports cardiologist who actually researches the aging athlete's heart. My guest is Dr. Guido Clausen, who's affiliated with KU Leuven and the University of Hasselt. You may have heard about this on the news. He's a principal investigator on the Masters at Heart study, following older athletes over many years to better understand what exercise actually does to the aging heart. Surprisingly, what he found was not what he expected. His team expected to prove that a lifetime of exercise protects the arteries. The data said something more complicated. Okay, the real message is not to do less, but it's to be smart. We get into atrial fibrillation, why your heart grows from cumulative hours of exercise rather than intensity, the artery plaque findings that made the news, and the practical things that every older athlete should be checking. All right, let's talk to Dr. Clausen. Guido Clausen, welcome to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure of being here. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you taking some time for us. You're an unusual animal. You're not just a medical doctor cardiologist, you're a scientist. Your research and perhaps your client base is in athletes. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah, that's entirely correct. I'm a sports cardiologist in the broad sense of the word. So I usually deal with and try to help both at very highly active individuals, calling them athletes. Not only those already achieving at the highest level and kind of taking care of their heart, but also people with cardiac disease that actually want to become more physically active. So it's a spectrum of patients I'm dealing with.
Excellent. All right. So I wanted to try a somewhat different format today than I normally do, just because your stuff is so interesting. And I don't want anybody to think they know what you're going to talk about and then not listen to what you have to say. So why don't we do this? I'm going to ask you to, you know, if you were talking to me as your patient or you were talking to just an older athlete audience and you were giving a talk, what would be the three or five recommendations based on your work as a doctor and your research that you would give? And then let's go into your background and how did you come to this perspective. Does that sound okay?
That sounds perfect. Yeah. So I think when dealing with athletic individuals, usually one of the first questions is they want to know whether whatever they are doing in terms of exercise, both intensity or the kind of global load, is actually okay on the level of the heart. And usually when I see active individuals, my first reasoning is not that this is a person at a higher risk. It's rather quite the opposite. I mean, we know, and that's I think the most important kind of point, that athletic individuals on a population point of view, they live on average longer than the general population. So I think if the person sitting in front of me is already quite active from a physical point of view, this is already quite reassuring. And so if you're moving, then definitely keep on moving because it will protect general health and will also have cardiovascular benefits. Now, the tricky part is like, what is the kind of limit of that benefit? And is there any ceiling to the kind of protective effects of exercise on the cardiovascular system? And I think there I think this is food for a longer discussion. But if I had to put it in points, is that we see the biggest kind of improvement of general health and also cardiovascular benefits from people who are sedentary to getting them active to at least 1 hour of exercise per week. I mean, that's where we see the biggest benefit in terms of a reduction of both mortality, so fewer deaths, but also improvements of other cardiovascular aspects. There's better blood pressure control. There is improvements on cholesterol levels. There is a reduced risk of arrhythmias, so rhythm disturbances like atrial fibrillation. So we see a tremendous benefit from people that are inactive to becoming very active active. These kind of improvements get a bit more profound, even if we reach exercise kind of durations like 3 to 6 hours of exercise per week. But then we kind of hit that kind of nether or lowest part of the curve. Whether or not there is an increased risk, and we can discuss later on what we mean with risk, with further increases in exercise dose and high-intensity exercise, is a matter of debate. But there have been some signals over the last years that if you engage into these high loads of exercise, you mainly do this from the aspect of exercise as a hobby rather than to gain extra protection on the level of the heart. So you do this for fun and because you enjoy exercise, but it's not gonna provide many more or further cardiovascular benefits, so to say.
Just a point of clarification on that. Do you, when you say more, I think you mean time, but does the intensity of each hour of exercise make any difference?
Yeah, there is definitely some influence by the intensity. So it's, if you, for example, look at the adaptations at the cardiac level, we see that there is a difference between people who are walking many hours per week versus those jogging, and then again versus those engaging in more, let's say, higher loads or high intensity exercise. But if we look at the kind of higher performing athletes, particularly elite athletes, there is actually some surprising findings, including some recent findings from our research group, showing that intensity when it comes to the athlete's heart, so the magnitude of the changes we see with regular exercise training, are more driven by exercise duration than exercise intensity. So in a recent study, we had a big sample of elite athletes, so young, almost semi-professional endurance athletes, and then also an older cohort of what we call masters athletes, so highly trained older individuals. And in all of these individuals, we had measurements of cardiac size as a kind of reflection of athlete's heart adaptation. And we also had information about the training that these guys have been doing. So we had the wearable readouts over the last months of training. And we would speculate up front that, as you say, that intensity would have a significant effect on the level of cardiac changes as opposed to maybe just the duration of exercise. But what we found was quite the opposite. So the major determinant of the magnitude of the athlete's heart was actually the duration of exercise. So the cumulative amount of training that these individuals did over time rather than the intensity they spent. And in fact, it was quite interesting because if we looked at the more professional athletes, so the young elite athletes, some of them even riding in the Tour de France, we saw that one striking observation is that they actually trained less intensive compared to the older athletic individuals. And so also in those professional athletes, the cardiac dimensions were actually larger. So they trained less intensive and still they had more benefit in terms of a larger heart muscle in terms of performance. Because we know that the size of the heart also is related to measures like VO2 max and exercise performance.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And as what I had said at the beginning is that we'll just let you give your quick recommendations and then we'll jump into your background and your research. But I do want to put a placeholder in to come back into this concept that you mentioned about that there's a curve of benefit that is very steep when you go from doing nothing to doing something and then stays steep for a little bit, you know, from to 1 hour and then to 5 hours a week. And then it starts to plateau off and you stop getting as much bang for your buck there. And then the other curve that overlays that would be the, you know, quote unquote risks, possible, health issues that may come from exercise that I would have assumed had to do with intensity. But anyway, I would just want to get into that, because what it sounded like is that as you had more time, you'd have more benefit, but then after 5 hours or something, that you start getting very little extra benefit. And then on the risk curve, you probably would have like no risks from doing 1 hour of exercise a week and maybe essentially none from five. But at some point you start having some risks of something happening. Anyway, I would just like to explore that concept with you before we finish our talk today. So let's go back to the beginning then and do our normal thing, which is, you know, tell our audience who you are, what you do, how did you come to know this stuff? You know, tell us about the papers that you and your team have put out here recently. That is how I know about you.
Thank you. Yeah. So my name is Hido Klaassen. I'm a cardiologist from Belgium, working in Hasselt and affiliated with the University of KU Leuven and University of Hasselt. I have been engaged in exercise cardiology science since 2011, when I started my PhD with my mentors, Sein Heidbuchel and André Lagerge, colleagues who I still work with very intensively, even over the last years, and continue hopefully for many years to come. So my passion has always been endurance sports. I live in Belgium. Cycling is probably our sport number one. And so from a young age, I've always been intrigued by exercise, particularly endurance exercise. I've also myself engaged in some endurance sports on a recreational level. But the passion is truly out there. And during my medical studies, I came into contact with my mentors that I mentioned before, working in University of Leuven. It was a very interesting concept, because it was the first time I heard the concept that there might be something like too much exercise, which was really quite came as a surprise, because I never heard about that possibility before. And it really intrigued me, and still continues to intrigue me. I think we are getting a more nuanced view the more research we do on this topic, and started to realize it's far more complex than we initially thought. So there's no such thing as this type of exercise is bad for everyone, or this exercise is good for all. It's really quite a complex, and we're starting to realize that it should be far more individualized, that there's genetic influences, risk factors, etc., that we have to take into account. And that is really the type of research that we're doing at the moment. So I think there's two big projects that we are doing and have been doing over the past years, and that are really bringing out some interesting findings. And the first one is what we call the Prospective Athletes Heart Study. It's the PROAT Heart Study. It's a study in which we recruit healthy endurance athletes at a very young age, 16 to 23 years. And the interesting part of the study, and also the ambition, is we want to follow these guys for up to 20 years. So it's not a cross-sectional design. It's really like a lifelong follow-up in which we want to explore the effects of such intense and voluminous endurance exercise on cardiac changes and evolution over time. And the second study is, because obviously if we have to wait 25 years before we start to have interesting and relevant findings, we thought maybe we also kind of fast forward a little bit. And so we also started what we call the Masters at Heart study, which is a project focusing on older endurance athletes above the age of 45, in which we mainly look at acquired heart disease, things like coronary artery disease and rhythm disturbances. And as you mentioned, both studies have provided quite some intriguing findings over the last years. I'm happy to kind of explore that with you further.
Yeah, please tell us. I think you've told us a little bit about what you were trying to do, but tell us how you did it. How did you collect the data? And be sure to highlight things that catch my attention as an older athlete. You know, are plaques in my arteries, and you know, other kinds of heart health conditions or factors.
Yeah, I'll start with the master's athletes in that regard. So the master's heart study was a project in which we invited master's athletes across Belgium to participate in a project that involved evaluation of the coronary vessels using a heart scan, which we called a coronary CT. And this scan really enables us to depict or identify plaques, so buildup of cholesterol and calcium deposits in the coronary vessel wall as a signal of coronary atherosclerosis.
Guido, and, is it calcium? Yeah, so, is it the hard and the soft that you were measuring?
It's in the blood vessel wall, so it's in the arteries or the blood vessels that perfuse the heart muscle. And so when we do such a heart scan, we put people in the scanner. Without any contrast, we take a picture of the heart, and all the calcium that is in the blood vessel wall kind of lights up, and that gives us we can quantify that and express that as a so-called calcium score, and that gives us an idea about the amount of calcium in the coronary vessels. And that's important because in the general population, this kind of calcium score, the higher the score is associated with events like a heart attack, for example. We also give contrast, and this is interesting because with the contrast in the lumen, so in the passage of the blood vessel, we can distinguish between truly calcified plaques, so plaques that are really that have calcium deposits, versus soft plaques, for example. And that's important because the more soft tissue in this buildup of plaque in the vessel wall is actually associated with a slightly higher risk of events like a myocardial infarction. So in some ways, if you have a plaque that is completely calcified, it's probably better in terms of risk than if plaques are a bit softer, because the softer the plaque, the more prone it might be to rupture and cause a heart attack, which occurs when the blood vessel gets obstructed by a thrombus. And that's actually important if you look at the results of that study, because we looked at 600 individuals, all free of cardiovascular disease that we knew of. They did not have any medication. They were a very healthy population. 400 of them were athletes and 200 were, let's say, non-athletes controls. And within the group of the athletes, we had those engaging in kind of lifelong exercise. They had been exercising for their whole life, which is probably also the audience that you work with a lot. And then you had also the athletes that kind of engaged at an older age, so after the age of 30. So they're what we call the late onset. Sometimes we call them the midlife crisis athletes. And so what we expected was that if you do exercise your whole life, that actually you might be protected from acquired disease of the coronary vessel. So you would actually have less plaques than the non-athletic controls. But what we found was completely the opposite. So if you look at the athletes compared to the non-athletes, especially the lifelong athletes, they had more plaques overall compared to the non-athletes. And that was quite surprising. If we then look at the morphology, so the characteristics of these plaques, then we found that there was no difference. So it's not that the athletes had more calcified plaques or more soft plaques. It was actually the same. But what is important in the interpretation of those studies, because you might get a bit, like if they have more plaques and there's no difference, you might think, okay, the athletes are at a higher risk. But what is very important is the characteristics of our control population. These were very physically active controls. They were not athletes, but they did some exercise. They are that nadir of the curve, so the lowest point of the curve that we talked about. And they had no cardiovascular risk factor. So if you're 45, you don't have any risk factors, and you do some degree of exercise, you're a very healthy person. And so to do better than those persons is actually quite difficult, and that's what we showed in our study. But what is important is that the athletes actually did have some higher burden of plaque. Now, the good message here is that there's been other studies as well before, and that also included controls and athletic individuals. And if we compare the plaques in our athletes compared to controls in other studies that were less healthy, we see that actually the plaques in our athletes were more calcified compared to a sedentary population. So although in our population there was no difference in the characteristics of the plaques, if we compare it to a sedentary population, even in our study, the plaques would be more beneficial. And we saw more, like the athletes, we typically see more calcified lesions compared to the general population.
Okay, so let me ask
that's
about
very
that.
Important because we...
Yeah, so yeah. Just to clarify that, when you say beneficial, you mean that the plaques are hard, they're calcified, they're less prone to bursting and putting something in the artery that then gets to a blood vessel and then you have a blockage and something dies. The athlete versus the sedentary person has more calcification and less soft plaque than the sedentary person. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. So okay. if you look at the plaque level, if you, as you mentioned, if you have a lot of calcium in these plaques, and then that also strengthens this plaque, it's less prone to rupture. And that's important because plaque rupture is really one of the ways that plaques can cause trouble. Like if the plaque bursts open, like if there is a rupture, a thrombus, like a clot, may form, and if it obstructs the artery completely, this causes a what we call a heart attack, like a myocardial infarction. And so, because the lesions may be more seem to be more calcified in the athletes, that might actually be a protective thing. But as I mentioned, it really depends on who is the control population. Like in the Master at Heart study, our controls were very healthy. It's hard to do much better. But if you take a sedentary population, we see more of these kind of soft, vulnerable plaques compared to our athletic population. And that might also explain why we see this mortality benefit in the athletes.
Let me just summarize here, just to get it settled in my mind, this disturbing news, I'm afraid, is that from a sedentary perspective, a lifelong athlete is cardiovascularly more healthy, including less soft plaques in their arteries, which is the thing that would cause the most problem. The hard plaques they have more of. The hard plaques, I guess, come from soft plaques, at some point they harden over time. It's like a scar or a scab or something like that. The problem in my mind is that the lifelong athlete who's been exercising hard, I guess, for at least lots of that time, maybe more when they were very young, their plaques are worse than the person who didn't exercise their whole life, picked up exercise late, haven't been doing it as much or maybe as hard. And so there's this sort of give and take that if I exercise even more than a modest amount, then maybe I love that and my life is better and I'm fitter and I can do more things and, I can enjoy my life better. All of those things are true for me. But it might be I might have to be careful because I'm somehow accumulating more soft and hard plaques in my arteries as a consequence of that. Anyway, did I understand that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, again, if we the individuals that we studied in the 600, all of them like were physically active, so none of them was completely sedentary, and that's probably the like from a recommendation point of view for prevention of cardiovascular disease, that's the most important message. Like if you do regular exercise, you are free of cardiovascular risk factors like high blood pressure and so on. That's the best possible thing you can do to prevent coronary disease, for example. If you engage really into very high loads of exercise, we start to see some increase in the plaque buildup in the coronary vessels. And so whether that in the long term is also associated with a higher risk of having a heart attack, that remains to be solved. I mean, we don't know. We are in our study, for example, we are following up on all those individuals over time to see whether it also relates to event, but we do not have that kind of final information at this point in time. But it is true that we see this kind of, we sometimes call it tear and wear at the level of the coronary vessels, and the future will have to tell us what that really means.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so I think that you're right
here as well. Is to take.
Yeah. Let me just jump in here. You're right to say that there's a lot that we don't know, and there's no recommendation to stop exercising and anything like that. But since we got one play at this, and I don't get a reset or another life, or a get out of jail free card. I've got to, do what I can to try to make it work as long as I can. And so it sounds to me like the information here for people like me is don't stop what you're doing if that's what's important to you. We don't know that that's like injuring you in a way that's going to cause you to have a shorter life or be less healthy later in your life. But there is some question marks. And so that if you're going to exercise that hard, that much, then you probably should do other things that maybe you shouldn't think that the exercise is protecting you from everything. And you should actually be doing what your cardiologist has been telling you. Get your cholesterol down, get your blood pressure down, get your blood sugar down. Do all of these other things so that whatever it is that the exercise is doing to you has the least chance of being harmful. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's the way that we deal with it at the moment. That's also kind of the recommendation that we wrote recently as well from an international point of view of how we should deal with these individuals. Because we do see also athletes coming to our office and they already bring you the heart scan and they say, what should I do now? Because I have this increased calcium score. And as you pointed out, the first thing we say is don't stop exercising. I mean, if that's what you want to do, then continue because we know it's very good for you in many aspects. But we do search for these kind of hidden risk factors. And I say hidden because very, very often people either do know, but they've ignored it or they think it's not important because they do a lot of exercise and so they are already very healthy and like medication is definitely not something for them. But actually we do also see in our and also others data that these risk factors play a role. I mean, we looked at this kind of cholesterol molecule called lipoprotein A, which is for 90% hereditary determined lipoprotein, so it's a kind of molecule in the blood, and it's associated with a higher risk of coronary artery disease. And if you look at our population, for example, of the athletes, and we see that an elevated lipoprotein A in the athlete population is also associated with higher plaque buildup in the coronary vessels. So, for example, measuring that molecule. Is something that could be very useful to as kind of risk stratification. Also, the cholesterol levels by itself, like LDL, the kind of bad cholesterol, is important because if that's very much elevated, it's having a higher plaque burden is a reason to consider having that cholesterol lowering therapy. And also, blood pressure is something very important. It's a risk factor that is often ignored. If individuals come to the doctor's office and the blood pressure is a bit elevated, we often blame it on kind of white coat hypertension because the athlete or the individual is in the office. But I think there the message is really measure it at home. And if it's still elevated at home, it's a reason for considering therapy, because a higher blood pressure, we know that from population studies, is very strongly associated with problems of the coronary vessels. And so, again, the masters athletes, they're a very healthy population, but on the individual level, we should look for these or consider these risk factors and also treat them. And if you do that, then you can continue exercising, but in a safer kind of environment with control of these risk factors.
Excellent. Okay, good. All right. So I think you also, in your studies, have looked at the effect of intensity, high intensity versus low intensity. I'm not even sure how you'd measure that, but maybe by heart rate or something. And the difference that makes on positive adaptation. I think you were measuring like the size of the heart. Did you also look at that in terms of these plaques?
In the Masseret Heart study, we also looked at that kind of effect of intensity versus duration for the buildup of plaques in the coronary vessels. And so out of the population of 600 individuals, 300 approximately were willing to provide their training data. So we had all of the training files assessed using a chest strap and a wearable. And from these kind of buildup of thousands of training files, we were able to determine the heart rate zones, the duration, and derive also the intensity of the exercise based on the heart rate. And so if we look at the results, so the association between training intensity, duration, and plaque buildup, we found we calculated this parameter, which we call E-TRIMP, Edwards TRIMP. It's a combination of duration and intensity, because for each training zone, especially the highest training zone, we provide a certain weight. And so the highest intensity gets the highest weight. And if we look at this E-TRIMP variable, we found that this was actually the best predictor of plaque buildup, so of the likelihood of having a high plaque burden in the coronary vessels of these individuals. So if we compare it to duration, it performs just a little bit better. So when it comes to buildup of plaques in the vessels, it's usually a combination of the duration of the exercise, but also the intensity. Now, I think there is also a difference between kind of buildup of plaques and changes that we see in the vessel or at the level of the heart muscle versus risk. When I talk about risk, it's the risk of having an acute event like a myocardial infarction or an arrhythmia. And particularly if we talk about arrhythmia, so rhythm disturbances, then we know from studies that the intensity really matters. So if you have a heart condition, like a heart disease or a weak heart muscle, a heart failure, so to speak, then we know that that if you do very vigorous exercise, that your risk of triggering life-threatening arrhythmia is higher than when you do more mild intensity exercise. So especially if you already have a pre-existing cardiac condition, we know that this kind of intensity really becomes an important thing to be aware of. And this was nicely kind of depicted in kind of what we call the exercise paradox. And it's a complex thing, but I'll try to take you through. It's like if you consider kind of the exercise behavior from sedentary to very regular exercises, for let's say from 0 days of exercise per week to 7 days of exercise per week, and you compare the risk of having a myocardial infarction, so a heart attack, we know that global, so average, the risk in the sedentary individual is the highest, and you reduce your risk of having a heart attack if you become more kind of engaged in exercise, both just the duration as well as the intensity. But if there's a second part, which is that if the sedentary person starts to do or decides to do very vigorous exercise, his acute risk during that exercise is much higher than when the same person is sitting in the sofa or lying in the bed. So during a vigorous exercise intensity, the risk is 50-fold higher than during the basal state. That kind of increased risk during the exercise activity proportional to the exercise intensity is still a bit higher in the athlete during exercise than at rest, but the magnitude of that acute risk is much smaller, whereas in the sedentary individual running, for example, a marathon, the risk is 50-fold. In the well-trained athletes, it's only 2-fold. So by doing regular exercise, you also reduce that acute risk when you do vigorous exercise activities. And that's very important because obviously we are not all running marathons, but if you run for the bus and you do a vigorous intensity bout, just because you're well-trained, your acute risk is also decreased when you decide to do that intense exercise. And again, that might be one of the reasons why we see that generally at the athletic population that mortality is lower when we compare it to the general population. It might be one of those protective effects that we see in the athletes.
Well, so I think that it's always a risk to oversimplify, but you know, that's what I'm always after, is the simplest explanation so that I know what to do. It feels like there is, for the person like me, where athletics and being fit is important to me, there is, that's an advantage over a person who hates exercise. I'm going to be a healthier person. But I also have the risk of kind of getting addicted to the suffering and being really exhausted and feeling like I've accomplished something when I've depleted myself entirely. And that might, if I think go back to these benefit and risk curves, that might push me past the sweet spot of where I've gotten the maximum benefit, or, you know, almost all of the maximum benefit. And now I'm starting to accumulate risks without much benefit from it other than pleasure in my life. But it's just something to consider. And I think the only thing that I can do about that, and then you weigh in here on what I've oversimplified, is to just be smart about everything else that I can do for my heart. You know, keep my, as we mentioned, blood pressure and blood sugar and cholesterol. And maybe there's other things that I could do. Try to do as well as I can on those. And then, you know, and just be careful that I'm not overdoing it. Even, you know, maybe I'm not even really enjoying it and I'm just doing it because I think it's helping me, but it's not.
Yeah, I think that's the most important point up front is to provide the information to the athlete. Like, what does the athlete want? Like, does he see it as a way to improve health, or is it because of his passion to suffer and to have this very high performance? I mean, it's not like a medical decision. That's a lifestyle choice. Like, if that's really what he or she wants, then okay. And I think at the physician level, it's important to explain that doesn't provide any extra benefits, and on the contrary, may actually increase some of the, between brackets, risks that we see in the cardiovascular adaptation there. So with that kind of excessive exercise or extreme exercise, there is a slightly higher risk of these coronary plaques, of this atrial fibrillation, etc. So I think I first want the athlete just to be aware of what to expect, and also, is it a lifestyle choice or is it purely for health prevention? If it's for health prevention, then I think counseling that this kind of extreme dose or intensity of exercise is not particularly necessary to achieve the goal might be for some individuals sufficient to kind of reduce a little bit of the exercise load. If that's like, if the goal is clear, consider that the athlete does want to engage in exercise, is aware that of the physiology, so to speak, and that there might be some risk, but he's very willing to kind of go into that path and still continue the exercise, then it really comes to kind of risk stratification. I think one of the most important questions there is there any risk of cardiac disease in the family? Like, is there a history of a heart attack at a young age? Because that's a very strong risk factor. Like, heritability is very important. Mm-hmm. If he had a father that had myocardial infarction at 45, that's really a reason to do a more profound checkup in that individual, even considering to do a heart scan, like a coronary CT, to look for lesions, because the family history is very important. The second very important part is symptoms. And symptoms in the masters athletes can be more subtle than we see in the general population. Usually the athletes do not come with just overt chest pain. It might be a slight reduction in exercise performance that they kind of relate to aging, but it has been there over the last month, becomes weird, or shortness of breath that wasn't there before and it becomes progressively worse. I mean, these can all be signs of an underlying cardiac problem. So symptoms should always be considered very actively, because it might be the subtle key to diagnosis. If you have that, then I think the traditional things like you discussed, like blood pressure, sugar levels, and cholesterol are key as a kind of add-on to that.
Yeah. Okay, so as we wrap up here, I want to follow up on a couple of things that we haven't mentioned, but I know are going through everybody's mind. You did mention the LP little a, and so people should check that, because if they've got elevated LP little a, then they're sort of they're extra vulnerable to problems, cholesterol problems. And so that they need to know that. But you know, it really, people should just, they should be checking their blood markers, check your ApoB, you know, are you high? You know, then you really should do something about it. And people will know this already if they've been listening to my podcast. What they will be fearing, I know this, I was afraid, was medication is going to affect my athletic performance. Statins, I'm afraid of statins. We've all heard muscle weaknesses and pain and things like that. And, you know, and then there's the backlash of, oh, that's all in people's heads, don't think about that. Have you in your practice had patients on statins who did or did not have negative effects on their athletic performance?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to kind of really truly assess what we mean by performance, but definitely I think statin intolerance is a significant problem, even in the general patient population, but particularly in the active population. So, I mean, there's a lot of controversy when it comes to statin in intolerance, but I think we can be pretty sure it's not all in the head. I mean, there's definitely some individuals that do have statin intolerance and have kind of reduction of or performance or more kind of that are bothered by muscle cramps when on statins compared to off. There is definitely also a factor in some individuals of the psychological aspects. Has been a famous trial called the Samson trial, which compared three study arms. One was patients who received nothing. The other group had placebo, and the third group had a statin. The ones taking no pills had the least symptoms, but there was no difference between people taking placebo and people taking statins. So that is not to kind of ignore that there is the possibility of statin intolerance, but there is also sometimes a psychological effect in some individuals. And usually it's even quite profound, like when you have athletic individuals coming into practice and it's consideration of medication. Sometimes even upfront they say, I don't want a cholesterol-lowering drugs because I've heard that it decreases performance. So even before they've taken it, there is almost like a statin unwillingness in quite some individuals. I think that there's multiple strategies that we can kind of, I mean, the first question is, does the individual need a statin? Because that's a very important thing. And that's where LP little a, that's where coronary CT in some cases may be very helpful. Because if you have a high cholesterol, your LP a, little a is high, and there is a workup with a coronary CT, and there's quite some plaque burden in the coronary vessels, then in that case, statins should be at least considered. And if then there is, let's say, an unwillingness or after a trial, there is intolerance, we can either try or have a trial with another statin or a lower dose, or sometimes either alternate dosing, like one day on the statin, one day off. That's also sometimes helpful in these individuals. But there's also alternatives over the last year. So we have other drugs like ezetimibe or bempedoic acid that might be useful in these situations of statin intolerance. In athletes that had, for example, a myocardial infarction, that have statin intolerance, even in some cases, we can consider injectable therapies like PCSK9 inhibitors or inclisiran. So over the last 10 years, there's really been a revolution in preventive or cholesterol-lowering drugs. And I think even in the future beyond, we might have very valuable alternatives for statins to kind of avoid the potential side effects. But it's like it's a real thing. We do see it in some individuals, not in all. It's probably a minority, I would say. But there is also a factor of unwillingness, or even broader than just the cholesterol lowering drugs. Like athletes in general are more vigilant when medication is prescribed as to whether it will affect performance. And as a physician, we have to deal with that. I mean, it's not something that we have to dislike, because it's a very natural phenomenon. It's their life. And so if it would affect, or there's a potential that it affects performance, we should just discuss that and look for solutions. And in the majority of cases, I think, in my experience, we find that solution.
Excellent. Well, I think that that's right. And I think that, you know, the people who are hesitating and have been hesitating, they, you know, it's important. You really have got to, you know, at least know if you've got this, you've got excess risk, and then, you know, be responsible for yourself, take care of yourself, do the right thing. It doesn't have to cost you everything. You know, in my personal experience, just to pave a path here, I started on a statin. I switched statins because I was having some issues. I then wasn't sure, but thought I was having a problem of reduced power output. So I went off of it for a while against my doctor's advice, and my power came back. And I thought, all right, that's it. I am not doing the statin anymore. And because I had gone through the statin, my doctor agreed to try other medications. And so now I'm on bempedoic acid and ezetimibe, and my ApoB is nice and low, and I have no symptoms. So anyway, people should just start down the path, get themselves figured out, and find a solution so that their athletic activities, which give them so much joy, don't cost them too much.
Yeah, I fully concur with that.
Fantastic. Well, Guido, thank you very much for your help here. And I apologize. Hey, audience, this is our second time doing this, because the first time we had technical troubles. I think that our AI overlords do not want you to hear this talk, because they have been after trying to kill this recording and succeeded on one occasion. So hope you enjoyed it. And Guido, thank you very much. Tell our audience how they can find you, more information about your work. I can put the links to the papers in the show notes.
Yeah, we also have a website called www.proatheart.be, same for Master at Heart, and through the references that Joe provides through the link, I would say.
Fantastic. All right, buddy. Well, hey, have a great day, and thanks again.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much for joining my conversation with Dr. Guido Claussen. You can find more information about his study and Dr. Claussen himself in the show notes.